April 21st, 2011, Steve Gruick with you. Got a special interview right now, a former WCW, former WWE, and a former TNA star, Johnny the Bull Stamboli, who wrestled as Relic in TNA. Today, Johnny the Bull. How you doing, Johnny?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing excellent. And right off the top, we, of course, remember you in TNA most recently as Relic, but update the fans what's currently going on with Johnny the Bull.
Well, currently Johnny the Bull is wrestling with a company called EXW. It's out here. It's like a local company in Chandler, Arizona, like Mesa, Arizona. We run a show at this bar called Toby Keith's every other Tuesday. And Val Venus is on it, Derek Nykirk, and my partner, Tyson Tyler. Kid's a rookie, but he'll be good. We do that every other Tuesday. And then as Relic, I wrestle for Lucha Libre USA. And that's worked out to be like once a month for that. And it's supposed to air, the next season's supposed to air sometime in May. I don't have an exact date yet.
Who created the Relic character?
I did. I wanted to reinvent myself, so I don't know. I was always a comic book fan, so I took a picture. I had a special effects artist by the name of Andre. He owns AFX Studios. He's done a lot of work for WCW. He did the Demon outfit for Del Torborg. He did Triple H's Conan gear. I think it was at a WrestleMania when he walked out with a crown on his head. I mean, he's done a lot of work. But I gave him a picture of Spawn, the creature from Jeepers Creepers, and Darth Maul. I said, make me a mask. And he took a molding of my face, and he made the mask out of clay. And I just gave him some other ideas, and he helped me design it. But it was my idea.
Well, since we're talking about Relic, let's go back to the TNA days. You arrived there in 2007. What happened, and ultimately, I guess, why aren't you currently in TNA right now?
Well, let me give you the real story. What happened, I flew up to WWE, and I had a week-long tryout. I did, two house shows. And Arn Anderson was a booking agent. And Arn Anderson and I, it's a long story, but we're not the best friends, best of friends, I guess I could say. And he was a booking agent. So when I went up there, the shows went great. The matches were great. I wrestled Val. I mean, the matches were fantastic. And then from there, I was supposed to be Dark Masters for the writers so they could see the character. So I met up with Vince. He loved the character. He came out and looked at it, loved it. And then when I was getting ready to do the Dark Masters, the report that Arn Anderson gave Stephanie and the writers was that I didn't know the Relic character, which I didn't. It was a work in progress, you know what I mean? I brought something to the table. I said, here's a character. Help me, help me direct it, give me some creative input on it. And that never happened. So then from there, I guess it was because of Arn Anderson, basically. He shot it down on the report, said I didn't know the character, basically. So that's where I left it with WWE. And then I flew into a pay-per-view in Atlanta for TNA. I brought the character with me. Showed it to Terry Taylor and Jeff Jarrett, and they loved it, so they booked me in that match with Abyss for that thumbtack match, which I was the only one that landed in the thumbtacks. But, I mean, that was a good match, but after that, they started putting me in matches that didn't mean anything. I created this character, and they were putting me in these matches that, and just making Relic look like you know, they're jobbing Relic out, basically. And I didn't want, I created this character. I didn't want that to happen. So I left. And they also had me, I was going there. There's a guy by the name of Joel Anderson. He was in Survivor. A couple, I don't know if you remember him, but TNA was trying to train him and hire him just based off of his appearances on Survivor. So he lived in Phoenix. So they had me training him twice a week for free, like to go out of my way to stop what I was doing, train him. They weren't compensating me for it. And then early Monday mornings before, you know, we would start recording for TNA, I would be in the ring with him in Orlando training him for free. So basically I got tired of being pimped by TNA, so I quit. Of course, you know, the rumors were going around that I got released, whatever, but the true story is that I quit because I'm just not, if you let the industry pimp you, then that's exactly what they'll do. They'll take advantage of you. So, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, finish your thought there.
So basically, I mean, if you let the industry pimp you, that's exactly what will happen. So, I mean, I refuse to let that happen, so I left. And that's, in a nutshell, with TNA. I mean, I'm friends with Terry Taylor. I'm friends with all those guys, but for some reason, the creative direction that they were taking Relic, I mean, I just didn't agree with it.
In terms of training, you were talking about doing some training there, training one of the guys from Survivor. Go back to the beginning with the WCW Power Plant. How was the training there? I mean, obviously you've been in the business for a number of years now. How was what was the training like that you got it in the Power Plant, and who was part of the class that you were in when you trained at the Power Plant?
The training at the Power Plant, I was with Jim Drack, Chuck Palumbo. Orndorff was running it. The original Power Plant, Sarge was running it, and Joey the Assassin. Jody Hamilton, the Assassin.
Right, right.
And then they upgraded the Power Plant, and they moved it over near the new office in Atlanta at the time. And, I mean, it was a good crew of people. I mean, we ran house shows, like good old days, this bar that's no longer around. We ran shows over there, and it would probably be like 500 people. It was me, Mike Sanders, Alan Funk, Mark Jindrak, Chuck Palumbo, who else? There's so many I can't remember.
Mike Sanders, maybe?
Yeah, Mike Sanders.
Yeah.
He was the above average. He's a good dude. All those guys, we're still friends. We still talk. Mike and I, not so much, but I still stay in touch with Jindrak, one of my best friends. Him and I speak all the time. Plus, we used to work together at Lucha Libre USA, and I stay in touch with Chuck and Alan Funk, but that's about it. But I mean, as far as the training is concerned, it is very physical, and they teach you how to bump. But I mean, the psychology part of it—you didn't. I mean, you can only learn that by getting on the ring and doing it. I was out of the Power Plant. I was there for I think 10 months, and then I went straight to TV. So I kind of learned backwards. I went straight to TV. Was wrestling for WCW, then WWE, and then I had to take a step back once I got released and travel and do Japan and do independent shows, which for a lot of people it's the other way around. They started doing independent shows in Japan and Mexico and what have you, and then they go up to the big show for WWE or WCW or TNA. I learned backwards, basically.
In WCW, obviously, you were the Mamalukes, Johnny the Bull, and Big Vito. Who came up with the gimmick of Johnny the Bull, and maybe some fond memories of the Mamalukes?
I came up with, when I was in the Power Plant, we were creating our characters. Paul told us to, hold on a second, I'm getting in my car. Paul Orndorff told us to, take aspects of our personality and exaggerate it. You know, things we like, as far as like movies or characters, and exaggerate it and play off of it. So I always like mafia movies, and everyone always said that I looked like Robert De Niro when I made a certain face. So I started thinking about the character. So I took a little bit of Robert De Niro and some mafia characters, and then the character from Rocky, where he had the leather hat and he bounced a rubber ball in the very first Rocky, and that's how I came up with Johnny the Bull. I mean, it was just an extension of my personality.
And whatever happened to Tony Mameluke?
I guess he had a few too many concussions. That's dangerous. You get one concussion, and it just, it's like a domino effect. You get more one after another. That's what happened to him. He just fell off. He couldn't, you know. I mean, it's either you continue to wrestle, or you pretty much kill yourself. I mean, you can have a stroke and die from too many concussions. I mean, he left WCW, and I think he did, you know, he worked the indie scene for a while. I mean, he's a good guy. We kind of fell off.
What was your thoughts when they replaced Tony Mameluke with Disco Inferno as your manager?
Disco is, you know, he's a great guy. I mean, he has a great mind for the business. I've always liked him, so I didn't mind it at all. I mean, he looked out for us as, you know, being younger in the industry, and he was kind of our voice for not only me, but for a lot of the young guys from the power plant.
They put the tag titles on you pretty quickly. I think it was in January of 2000 you ended up winning the tag title. So when you got this push and they gave you the tag titles, did you really think maybe this was the start of something big in your career?
Yes, I did. I thought, you know, I at that point, which if I could do it all over, I would change a few things. But at that point, I was young. I was 20 years old. Came from pretty much nothing to now I'm on TV, so it blinded me in a few ways, I guess, and I thought that was pretty much it. I thought it was all, you know, the only way it was up at that point.
Talk about the injury in, I believe it was about mid-2000, yet you were in a match with Terry Funk. Talk about the injury, and do you think that really kind of deflated your push at that point?
It definitely was a setback for sure, because I was getting a big push, and it was my first singles match after they split the tag team up. It's my first singles match against Terry Funk, a legend in our sport. So I was pretty fired up, and they asked me. They came to me and they're like, you know, what can you do off the top rope to the floor? And at that point, you know, I was like, what can I do? You know what I mean? What do you want me to do? I'll do it. You know, I was just so amped up to be in that match. And so I came up with that move, and they're like, you sure you can do it? I was like, yeah, I'm sure I can do it. No problem. So, I mean, the bottom line is I wouldn't have hurt myself in that move if I would have simply just urinated before I went out. I had a full bladder. And when I hit the ground, there's so much pressure and weight that it partially tore my bladder a little bit. And I thought I broke my back at that point because I stood up. I mean, I've watched that. Every time I watch it, I sweat because I felt my lower back shift, my pelvis shift. I didn't break anything, but I did tear, you know, partially tore my bladder, and I completely... I mean, it was, I urinated on myself. It was, I barely finished the match, barely. And then I woke up in a hospital with a catheter in me, and all the guys, all the boys were pretty much at the hospital making sure I was okay. I mean, all of them, Kevin Nash, everybody. But yeah, I mean, it was a major setback. And then right when I came back from that, I broke my leg in Australia, my fibula in Australia.
Talk about the dying days of WCW. Obviously, you were there at the very end. What was the mood? What was the feeling about where the company was or where it was going? And were you totally blindsided when Vince McMahon purchased WCW?
Uh, I was blindsided, yeah. I was excited at the same time. I mean, it was a lot of unanswered questions. We didn't know what direction we were going. We didn't know whose contract was going to be bought out. You know what I mean? So, I mean, WCW was, I had a blast there. I mean, everybody was cool. I mean, you had certain people there that you didn't get along with, but I mean, that's life. But, I mean, WCW is definitely missed, for sure. I mean, just the way they ran things, and it was a total shock when we lost TV. I mean, that was the reason that, because Ted Turner always said that there would be wrestling. You'd always have wrestling on TNT. I don't even think that he really knew that it was being sold out from under him. I mean, that's just a rumor on the street. But, everyone was pretty much in limbo. And then they contacted me, Johnny H. contacted me, and told me that he wanted me to meet with Jim Ross. Jim Ross came to town. I met with him, and then basically it was like an interview. And then 2 weeks later, they were like, you got to move up to Cincinnati. We want you to go through our system, because WCW's way of wrestling was a little different from WWE's. So they wanted me to go back through their system. And so basically I had to drop everything I was doing and move to Cincinnati. But I was relieved that they bought my contract out, but I was, you know, kind of shocked at the same time. I had to move from home. But that's the way the wrestling business is. You got to dedicate yourself to it and be willing to cancel everything else out.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what was your thought? I mean, obviously you had a pretty good run in WCW. You were the tag champion there, and then WWE buys WCW, and then they say, okay, Johnny, we want to send you down to developmental.
It was kind of played with your mind a little bit. Definitely, it was a test for it was testing my love for the industry. But I was 19, I'm 34 now, so, and I'm still doing it. Not full time, but I'm still doing it. But I mean, it was definitely humbling to go straight to TV, back to developmental. But whatever, I mean, I had to learn their way of doing it. Either you work with them or you're not there. It's their way or the highway, pretty much.
How did Les Thatcher's approach to training differ from the power plant?
Les actually incorporated some, you know, psychology behind it. Like, he would, instead of just putting us in the ring and bumping us around and running spots, we would get out there and just work and call it in the ring. I mean, he had some psychology behind it. Power plant was just bump, spot, bump, 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 which power plant, I mean, it was a fantastic way of entering into the business and learning all the basics. And Paul Orndorff was an excellent coach, instructor, and a great person. Sarge, too. Sarge was, as far as, like, teaching how to bump and the basic fundamentals of wrestling, I mean, he's a fantastic instructor too. We have our arguments every once in a while. That's because it's just, he's a passionate guy, I'm a passionate guy, but other than that, as a person, he's a great guy.
You know, looking back, it's, I don't consider you a hardcore wrestler yet. You were a WCW hardcore champion and a WWE hardcore champion. So a little bit of irony there, I guess, in looking back in your career as some of the titles that you were able to win.
Yeah, I mean, when they asked me if I wanted to do the hardcore thing, I mean, I was excited about it. You know, I don't get as hardcore as some people, but I do enjoy the matches. But I enjoy a wrestling match more than a hardcore match. Getting out there and having actually a good wrestling match with someone that can go. That, like Ben Law, for example, when I wrestled him, you knew you were going to have a match, and you knew that he was going to make you work, and you knew that he was going to elevate you. because he's going to make you work harder. I like wrestling guys like that.
Did you like the FBI group better, you and Chuck and Nunzio? Did you like that group better than the Mamelukes?
They were different, but yes, I did. I enjoyed working with Vito, but I was better friends with Chuck and Nunzio. So, that gimmick was so marketable. And, it was completely different from the FBI gimmick in ECW. So, I really enjoyed it. I thought that gimmick could have went a long way, that tag team, because it was picking up steam and people were enjoying it. And then politics kicked in. It broke us up.
What do you consider your best match in WWE?
A lot of them were house shows, like, that weren't recorded. Like, I had some really good matches with Undertaker. We didn't even talk about anything. He would just say, listen to me. And we'd go out, and I was less, I don't know, sometimes you get a little nervous before a match, but, I was basically ice water when I was going into the match with him, because I didn't have to worry about anything.
I can't imagine you being somewhat young and green in the business, all of a sudden, okay, tonight you're working The Undertaker at a house show. It's like,
right.
Wow,
right.
And okay.
Then I remember one time I was getting ready to wrestle Undertaker for SmackDown, and it was in Tucson, Arizona. And I don't normally mark out, but I'm standing in the ring, and then his dry ice starts creeping out the curtain. And he starts walking out, and I'm watching him walk through the ring, and I was like, wow, I'm getting ready to wrestle Undertaker. And he, not only is he a legend in the sport, but as a person, you would think that he would be stuck up or just, some people think that about guys in that position, but he's, out of all those guys, those top guys like that, he's my favorite by far.
What happened with your release? How did you learn your WWE release? And I guess what was your reaction at that point?
I kind of felt it coming. They would do that periodically. I guess once a year they would just clean house. And you can tell creatively they weren't really doing anything. They'd already split us up. It was in transitions, went from splitting us up to, they're trying to figure out what they wanted to do with us. They did, before they released me, they booked me on a bunch of, overseas tours and they made sure that I had some money come in before they released me. So I was at Outback Steakhouse at, 9:30 at night, and Johnny Ace called me, and he's like, Johnny, I got good news and I got bad news. That's the way he starts out the phone call. So I was like, all right, well, what's the bad news? He's like, we're going to have to release you. I was like, well, what's the good news? He's like, but I can get you booked in Japan. And I had already been talking to someone over in Japan because I felt it coming. So, he said that he could get me booked, but I pretty much took. I had that all taken care of. That's when I went over to All Japan.
Talk about All Japan and maybe how the politics in Japan differ than here in the United States.
As an American, there's not as much politics. One, because you don't really know the language, so it keeps you out of the loop of a lot of things. Muda, he was a fantastic person to work for too. He was, he's all business though. Anyone in that position, but I really didn't get a dose of the politics. Every once in a while, the schedule over there is it's kind of grueling, but I don't know. I never really got a taste. They took care of me over when I was over there. All Japan, they took care of me over there. We started the Voodoo Murderers over there. It was me and Taru. And then he brought a couple of his friends in, like Brother Yoshi and Kondo. And then I asked to bring Chuck in. Me and Chuck would always get each other booked. So I'd ask to bring Chuck in. And then I believe Matt Bloom, 8-Train, was a part of it briefly before
right.
he went to New Japan.
Right.
So and we had a good crew over there, and we would work. Eddie Fatu, rest in peace. He was a good friend of mine. Really
Umaga.
Yeah, Umaga.
Yep.
We worked them and KM Osman, and I think they were called ROD. We had some good matches and good pay-per-view matches with them. But as far as, I never really got it, I mean, the politics is completely different.
I was going to ask you, how does the fans differ? Because obviously we're always trained to, you know, you work in the United States, it's quick reactions, big pops from the crowd, and then you go to Japan and the fan base is totally different. They don't pop a lot. They come and a lot of times they're dressed up to the show. So how do you feel the fans really differ when you would work in front of them?
I tell you what, I mean, the fans, they're becoming more Americanized as far as the way they react to things. When I was over there for All Japan, I mean, we would, the style, the wrestling style was different, but the fans started, I mean, they reacted to the way that we would do things in America, like as far as like we'd set up a spot and expecting a certain reaction out of that, from that spot. And we would get some of the fan reactions, especially when Chuck and I would do some of our tag moves together. But, I mean, I don't know. You can get away with, like, we would walk to the crowds. Kairu would swing his whip and smack people with his whip. I mean, we're grabbing babies and walking away from the fans. We have the baby and we're walking away from them, and they enjoy it. They don't care. I mean, I enjoy, because you can get away with more with the fans in Japan than you can with America. I enjoyed the fans in Japan because they like to be a part of it in terms of you could do things to them and they're not going to really try to fight you. You know what I mean? They're just glad to be a part of the show.
I wanted to ask you, I think you have an interesting perspective because obviously you wrestled for WCW, WWE, and TNA. And obviously, you know, us as fans, we see what's on television and what's at the house shows. From a backstage perspective, can you kind of compare how they differ in terms of the creative process, the booking philosophy, the business aspects of things, how the three companies are run differently?
WWE is a well-oiled machine. I mean, they got everything down. That's why they're in the position that they're in. And I guess I would say TNA, when I was there, I don't know how it is now because it's completely different now. But when I was there, it was a little more, a buddy system with TNA. I don't know. I came from, you know, a different locker room. And when I came in there, I mean, I was friends with everyone, but I don't know. I guess I didn't click with the right person at TNA that I needed to click with. I mean, that's what it really comes down to. There, when I was there, it was pretty much a good old boy buddy system.
Go ahead, Johnny.
I'm just saying, I've worked at pretty much every major company that there is to work at. The only company I haven't worked at is New Japan, which I would like to work there. But they just haven't made me an offer. And right now, I probably wouldn't go there just because I got other things going on. But, I mean, just being in WCW's locker room, WWE's locker room, and TNA's locker room, I would have to say, as much as I like WCW, WWE is my favorite. Because when they are pushing you and when they are behind you, I mean, it's a well-oiled machine.
Which of the three gave you the most creative input? I mean, is it one that said, you know, okay, Johnny, this is what we're going to do tonight, and I want you to do it, or was there one that said, okay, Johnny, you know, not that they're looking for your input, but you could be a little more accessible, and you could say, hey, here's an idea I was thinking of, maybe I could throw this in here. Did they differ that way?
Well, no, they all. I mean, everywhere I've worked, they've always, you know, welcomed your creative input. Now, if they use it, that's another story, but they would always ask, do you have any ideas, or or, you know, you'd present it to them, and they would take a little bit of your idea and then mix it with their own. The thing about it is, if you come up with an idea, you have to try and make it seem like it was their idea, and that's pretty much the way it was everywhere I went. To try to make them seem like it was their idea, so they would use your idea. And I mean, that was in WWE, that was in WCW, that was in TNA. But I think I had more creative, to answer the question, I had more creative input in WWE, because WCW, I was still really young and a rookie, so I mean, pretty much whatever they told me is what I did. And then as I learned the business more and learned how everything worked, then I, you know, WWE, I got to utilize that platform of, you know, creatively inputting my own ideas to it. Vito, when I was in WCW, Vito pretty much, you know, he came up with the majority of the ideas. The only thing I came up with was my character.
Are you currently following TNA and WWE? And if so, what do you kind of think of the current products and storylines?
I don't even watch them at all. Every once in a while, I'll tune in to watch my boy Ray, because him and I are still really good friends. He's one of my best friends in the business. But I mean, for the most part, I can't answer that question, because I don't watch it. I'd rather watch UFC, to be honest.
Who's your favorite fighter in UFC?
I enjoy watching Brock.
Right.
I like watching Brock. Who's my favorite fighter?
There's a lot of them right now.
I like GFC. He's a pretty specimen. I would say my favorite fighter is GFC.
No, kind of in closing here, Johnny. I know that you you're currently still wrestling. You're still active, and you're still and you also have a job outside of wrestling. Where do you see yourself going? What do you want to accomplish from here? And I guess ultimately, do you have hopes of maybe someday getting back with TNA or WWE, or where do you see your career going in the next handful of years?
That's a good question. I mean, I've stayed in the business. I've always done other things to pay the bills, because wrestling, you know, when you get older, it doesn't, unless you're with a big company like WWE or TNA, it doesn't really pay the bills. I stay in the business in hopes that maybe I would get that offer one day. I doubt it would be with TNA, because I kind of burned the bridge there on purpose. But, I mean, if WWE were to make me an offer, a decent offer, I mean, I wouldn't go there for a small amount. I mean, it would have to be a decent offer, because, you know, I want to be able to have a family, and being on the road, gone all the time, it's difficult to have a family. I'm getting older in age, but yeah, I mean, I stay in the business with that one small little grain of hope that, you know, and I think everyone does that, but hope that they would, you know, that they would make an offer to me, but I don't hang my hat on it, you know what I mean? That's why I take care of other things, because, you know, when I was young going into the business, all my eggs were in one basket, and that's one of the things that I learned. You know, I made the mistake of putting all my eggs in one basket. Now I have other options I can do. I don't have to worry about wrestling. It's not my life anymore. If I don't get booked for 3 months, I'm fine.
Right.
But I mean, if they were to come to me and say, hey, Johnny, you know, we got an idea for you. What do you think about it? And here's what we're going to offer you. Then yes, by all means. But I'm not going to go to them, because when you go to them, that's when you lose leverage. If you try to reach out to them, you lose your leverage. So sure. I'll sit back, and if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I'm not going to. I'm alive. There's a lot of people that I know, like 15 people that have died in 5 years.
Wow.
And out of 12 people that were in my wrestling camp in Cincinnati, 6 of them are dead. That's a 50% chance. You know what I mean? The ratios are around 50%. I mean, it's crazy. So just all the people that have died, I mean, I was right there with them with everything. All those guys, a lot of those guys, it changes my whole perspective on the business.
Maybe a final question. What was your reaction to Edge retiring?
He's an amazing wrestler. He's an amazing person. He retired before his time, and that's just the name of the game. You can't keep putting your body through that. Our bodies are not meant to bounce around like that on a mat. I mean, it's gravity. Gravity's going to win every time. But he retired before his time. He had another, if his neck would have allowed it, or back or his neck, I mean, he had another 10 years in him.
Well, Johnny, we want to thank you for your time. I know your time is running out as well, but we want to thank you for coming on the line and talking to us. We'd love to do it again sometime. And quickly plug anything you got coming up, websites, Twitter, Facebook, whatever that Johnny's currently involved in.
Twitter, you can follow me at J3K420. We also have a site. It's exw.com. It's based out of Arizona. Me, Derek Nykirk, Val Venus, my partner Tyson Tyler on that. If you want to check out some new innovative moves that we're doing, you can go on that site, or you can type in this new move. We call it the GFY. It's a pretty impressive move. I came up with it. If you go to YouTube and you type in Johnny the Bull, Sam Bowie, and Tyson Tyler's GFY, you'll be able to see the move that I'm talking about. Other than that, I have a show in New Mexico for Lucha Libre USA. I believe it's on the 28th at the Hard Rock Casino there. And I may be doing a show coming in Vegas coming up soon. I haven't confirmed it yet, but I mean, I have something going on at least once a month. And then we run a show every other Tuesday in Mesa, Arizona at Toby Keith's, it's a little bar in Mesa. So that's pretty much it.
And lastly, we just want to wish you a happy birthday, because I know yesterday was your birthday.
Yes, it was. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Johnny. And we appreciate your time, and we wish you all the best of luck in professional wrestling and in your personal life.
I appreciate it. It was nice talking to you. Thanks, Steve.